Time to pull up a chair and talk some Dynasty football. I am your host, JJ Wenner, and this is the Rider Dynasty podcast presented by Gridiron Ratings. Tonight, we dive into training camp battles, the running back edition. We will look at eight muddled backfields and help you invest your draft capital wisely. With me is my co-host, Dynasty Guru, and podcast host for SGPN Fantasy, a true Dynasty dork, Dave Heilman. How are you doing, sir?
Doing great, man. Looking forward to talking about this.
Looking forward myself. Also with us, our returning champion. He runs with the Dynasty Dorks football crew. And now, I'm excited to announce he accepted my pod proposal. Is that what we would call this?
Sure.
And he is the new co-host of the Rider Dynasty podcast, Justin. What's going on, buddy? I think you froze because you're not showing any facial expressions as I speak.
Is that exciting?
Oh, no. Is that a harbinger of what is to come?
Well, I will say this for Justin. He's very happy, and he is glad to accept your podposal.
It's harder to say
than you think. And he's so much looking forward to it that he broke the internet.
Well, sometimes that happens. And speaking of being excited, pulling up a chair for the first time on the Rod Pod. You can find him on Fantasy Pros, where he not only does an amazing job on the podcast, he writes top-notch content, but he also pushes a lot of tacos, and I respect that. You can find him on Twitter and on TikTok at Andrew Erickson _. It's Mr. Andrew Erickson. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. I wish that I could come on here and say that I just eaten tacos, but it was salad night for me. So a little disappointing, but hey, I got to make sure I'm energized, not focused or super focused in and not having the tacos hold me back. You know, I don't want to be speechless like Justin was before, where he just couldn't, he couldn't come up with words to say how excited he was. So I'm excited. So I'll talk for both of us. I'm excited to be on here and break down these backfields.
Hey, Justin, you're back.
And back.
Andrew, great to hear. I have to say to you, though, Andrew, I was listening to your pod today, and I really feel like Joe was actively rooting against you. I mean, I didn't get to hear the ending yet. I'm about 5 minutes from the end.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the way I was, he probably just thought that I wasn't deserving to win, which I don't think that he was probably wrong. It was one of those where, you know, you're watching, it's like watching a Thursday night game where both teams are just playing horribly, and you're like, dude, no one deserves to win this game. Like, but somebody has to win because you just can't end in a tie. So, you know, ultimately I kind of backpedaled into victory. So I think that's why. I think he was expecting more fireworks and less dud of a performance from the winner. But hey, I still got the W, so.
Hey, a W is a W. Justin, we got cut off before. I made the big announcement that I extended a podposal to you, and that you are the new co-host of the Rider Dynasty podcast.
Yeah, so it was kind of one of those things where I could hear you wax poetically about the offer that you gave me, and I'm like, oh man, he's making me feel great about myself, and then I can't talk because my computer's frozen, and I can't. So no, JJ, I appreciate that opportunity. I'm looking forward to joining the Rod Pod and really kind of putting in some work this season as we get into football. Andrew, I have to say I was looking forward to this. I'm always excited about chopping it up with the Fantasy Pros folks, and this time of year is always my favorite because the Family Feud game is always one of the popular podcasts I like to listen to. So you guys are doing a great job.
Yeah. Well, hey, you came in at a good time. You know, I am 2-0 undefeated in Family Feud. So.
Well, listen, I think it's time to change your Twitter bio. Sometimes you got to pump up the victories. All right, before we jump into the episode, we are giving away an autographed DeAndre Swift's Lion jersey. All you need to do is leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. Once we hit 100 reviews, we will draw a winner. Look for a link in the show notes to the pod if you're watching on YouTube, or if you're listening on any of the streaming services. The link is there. And as always, of course, do all your typical YouTube podcast things like subscribe, hit the bell, leave a comment. It helps us grow and provide you with the content that you want. Let's just get right into the main topic. Last episode, Dave and I were joined by Drew Davenport to talk poker, legal updates, and auction strategy. If you missed the episode, please check it out on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. But tonight, we start our training camp battle series, which looks at the most muddled team position groups. We kick off the series talking about running backs. Now, what we did is we narrowed the field by looking for backfields where teammates were separated by less than five rounds of redraft ADP. Backfields where the training camp and preseason will clarify who will get the opportunity to shine on your rosters. So let's kick it off with Green Bay. Green Bay, we have Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. Aaron Jones is right now going at 2-6 in redraft. A.J. Dillon's going about four rounds later at 6-1. Andrew, looking at this backfield, where do you think the value is?
I think that the value is clearly in A.J. Dillon. And I actually released a thread kind of talking about, because with Aaron Jones, the calling card, the selling point, the easy digestible stat with him is just reading off the splits without Devontae Adams in the lineup. Like, that's really kind of the go-to with Aaron Jones. And I'll admit, like, there's a lot of upside into that potential with Aaron Jones. But, you know, I took a deeper dive into, like, the actual splits, and you kind of look at actually every single game that he's played without Devontae Adams, and he's had these big games. They also came with other guys also not in the lineup. Like, just even, like, referring back to last year, it was that COVID game where not only Adams was out, but Lazard was out. MVS was out. Robert Tonyan tore his ACL halfway through the game. So, of course, Aaron Jones had 11 targets in that game. So, I just think that that is going to be not necessarily the exact case during an entire season where the Packers are not just relying on Aaron Jones more based on, oh, we don't have Adams this week. It's like they're going into the season knowing that they don't have Adams. So I think that the strategy is not going to just be, okay, well, we got Aaron Jones 10 targets per game. I don't really think that's going to be the case. Like, he's going to have big games, but so will not A.J. Dillon. Like, A.J. Dillon is probably the favorite to lead this team in rushing yards and rushing attempts. Now, obviously, you want the receptions and the PPR for those types of leagues, but just looking at the second half of last season, A.J. Dillon was third in the NFL in red zone touches, 32. So is Aaron Jones going to be the main touchdown scorer like he was in years past when he was a top five running back? I'm not so convinced. And when you just kind of zoom out and just look at their profiles, okay, Aaron Jones is a 27-year-old running back. A.J. Dillon is a 24-year-old running back. A.J. Dillon was the RB6 over the last 8 weeks of last season. Aaron Jones was RB23 in terms of points per game. Any situation where you have a 23-year-old running back be the RB6 versus a older veteran in his same backfield, in almost every other scenario, that guy is going ahead of the older guy. Like, because that's just how dynasty works, and that's how redraft works, because you're waiting for the next guy to take the step. But for some reason, you know, Aaron Jones has created this buffer where he's untouchable. You know, he has to be ranked over A.J. Dillon. I mean, you know, maybe it's just because we were just waiting so long for Aaron Jones to finally get a shot at being like the guy in the backfield. And I'm still not sure we're ever really going to see it. And this year, I think it's going to be closer to a 50-50 split, which means A.J. Dillon going so much later is the better value, in my opinion.
I can't disagree with you. I mean, just looking at last year, it was a 50-50 split. I mean, right? We had, what, 167 to 171 carries? It's pretty 50-50. Right? There's not a huge difference. Receptions are towards Aaron Jones. Justin, where are you with these two players?
So I love them both, actually. I mean, Aaron Jones is coming with a pretty good premium on ADP right now, but I think Andrew believes a little bit of it. I'm a little bit higher on the upside of the receptions. Devontae Adams is gone. So in those games where Devontae Adams did not play, Aaron Jones was a reception hog, and reception is king in the PPR game. I think we've got on our hands here, though, probably the best replica of the Saints, Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram backfield that had, I believe, two running backs in the top 15 in 2019. Don't hold me to the year. I can't remember. But I think this is going to be the closest replica, and I think it's something where A.J. Dillon is really going to have a lot of sauce in between the tackles, and he caught the ball last year. So, I mean, he's also going to catch passes, but I think you're going to see that both of these guys are going to show some real good value, even at their current ADP.
So, Dave, do we see each of these guys finishing in the top 24?
Oh, yeah. No, I think that's definitely in their own possibilities. And, You know, I like both guys, and I do like Aaron Jones. But to Andrew's point, you know, you're looking at building your roster. You're looking at who are the guys around him. So if you're looking at Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon as similar production, A.J. Dillon is heavily discounted. You're looking at the players around A.J. Dillon that you can get versus the ones that are around Aaron Jones. You're kind of you're definitely shortening your ceiling by getting both players. It's nice to get both, but when they're on bye week, you're losing both guys. They're going to cannibalize each other a little bit. So, you know, if you get a better player drafted around the Aaron Jones and then fall back into A.J. Dillon later, I like that combo better than taking Aaron Jones and then getting, I'm not sure who I'll get in, you know, the 65-70 range. But, you know, that's the way that I look at it as far as my roster builds is how am I going to combo those two, you know, options.
Now, looking at the rest of that depth chart, is there anybody there? Because, of course, this is a dynasty show. And as everybody who has listened to this show knows, I love deep roster stashes. I have some rosters that are only deep roster stashes, and there's nobody good on them. That's not true. So who in this crew, is there anybody besides Kylan Hill, or are we even done with Kylan Hill, Andrew?
I wasn't the biggest Kylan Hill person when he came out last year. I know that I definitely added Patrick Taylor at some point last year because of all the guys that were out due to COVID. So I know I added him on my roster at one point. So the name that I'm gravitating towards is probably Tyler Goodson. I liked his profile coming out this year. Obviously not someone that has a lot of draft capital attached to him, but an intriguing prospect nonetheless. And behind Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, I really think it is wide open for who is that kind of number three running back. So Tyler Goodson would be probably the name that I would gravitate towards.
All right, gentlemen, why don't we then take a look at the next team up? Ooh, the Houston Texans. There is a lot of ugly here in general on this team. The top two backs are Dameon Pierce and Marlon Mack in redraft. Dameon Pierce is going at the end of the 10th. Marlon Mack's going at the beginning of the 13th. ECR has them very close. Dameon Pierce is RB50. Marlon Mack is RB55. Dave, I'll go to you first. Which way are you leaning in this backfield?
Yeah, Dameon Pierce, he's not been a three down lead dog back to his Florida days. He's definitely a very efficient runner. You know, you see the touchdowns per attempt is pretty eye popping when you look at it. But I think it's gonna be a combination here. But I do think they're gonna use Dameon Pierce more than they would a Marlon Mack. And Marlon Mack, when he started out, he was Frank Gore's change of pace guy. So he's played that role before. But Marlon Mack, he's not been exactly the same since he came off the Achilles injury. Dameon Pierce is just a younger guy. They just invested a little bit of draft capital in him, an early fourth round pick. So I think Pierce get the bulk of it. But you know, Marlon Mack will definitely have his.
Andrew, which way are you leaning?
I am not leaning towards either of those guys. Actually, I'm going down the depth chart. I'm going to Rex Burkhead. I think that Rex Burkhead is the interesting name in the Texans backfield because he is the highest paid guy in the backfield. Like, he has the biggest contract. The Texans extended him at the end of last year before they signed Mack and before they drafted Dameon Pierce. Now, I think ultimately they'd like, you know, Pierce to step up and become, you know, their early down guy. But how often are the Texans going to be in a situation where, oh, they're up by 10 points, they can run the football in the second half? Like, how often is that going to happen? Like, probably not that much. I mean, this team is still really young. They still had a lot of turnover on defense and still a lot of pieces to fit with a roster that, look, Davis Mills is the quarterback. Like, this team may not score a lot of points. So what do? You're going to be passing the ball in the second half, and that means Rex Burkhead's probably going to be in the game as a pass-catching back. And he definitely has better pass-catching skills than both Marlon Mack and Dameon Pierce, who really was not featured in that role at all at Florida. So Burkhead has ties to Nick Caseria from his days in New England, and I don't think you shouldn't overlook the fact that last year Burkhead put nearly doubled his career highs in rushing attempts, rushing yards, and games started in his first year in Houston. So, I mean, I'm just trying to follow the money here because it's like you know, Marlon Mack, like mentioning the torn Achilles, like, what are you really going to get from him? And Pierce, I think, okay, like down the stretch, I think kind of looking after the Texans bye week, I think that's when we could see Pierce maybe take on a bigger role like we see with a lot of these rookies. But, you know, for week one, like, we're going to be talking about Rex Burkhead as, oh, you got to add this guy off the waiver wire. You know, he was, you know, he had six targets in the Texans' loss to the Jaguars or whoever they're playing week one. Like, that's going to be the narrative. And it's like, oh, I already have him on my roster.
Yeah, and there is no cheaper piece of that backfield. He's going in the 20th round of redraft ADP. Justin, are you leaning Burkhead too, or would you reach for one of the other two?
Yeah, I mean, I think Andrew hit the nail on the head and said everything probably much more articulately than I would have with this Houston Texans backfield. I'm chasing receptions here, and Rex Burkhead would be the guy. I don't think, you know, between the tackles, they're not going to do much. Their offensive line is not that great. And Pep Hamilton, from his time that I got to see him with the Los Angeles Chargers, I really like Pep Hamilton, and he's going to want to put the ball in the air. And like Andrew very keenly pointed out, they're going to be behind most all season. So I think Rex Burkhead is probably the way to lean. If you can avoid the backfield, I don't think I have to tell you, definitely avoid.
Now, Dave, looking at that running back depth chart, there is like a couple names there. Like, there's a Royce Freeman. We've all had a share of Royce Freeman. We all, well, some of us, picked up Dare Ungbawale last year, because I thought, of course, he would take that James White role for the 3 seconds he was on Tampa Bay. Any of those guys interest you, Dave?
No, and this depth chart is so bad that you could see someone come in here and shake things up, whether it's, you know, a Devontae Booker, it's signed over here, or you see one of these, you know, cap casualties comes over here. I mean, it's just so bad that somebody's third or fourth string running back could come over here and you know, be the guy.
Yeah, I can't see taking either Damian Pierce or Marlon Mack at that ADP. I mean, with what's around them, I don't know. That's a tough pill to swallow, gentlemen. All right, well, let's go to our next backfield. Seattle, everybody's favorite. We have Ken Walker coming over in the draft. He's now going at 8-7 in redraft. And Rashad Penny is going at 8-11, both in the eighth round. That's shocking. Justin, are you leaning one way or the other?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would probably be the fresh legs of Ken Walker that I would lean toward. 77 is a pretty high ADP for him, because I don't really know what this offense is going to do, and there's not going to be a lot of touchdown equity there. Rashad Penny, he's a guy who's got to put up if he wants to continue to play in the league this year. He had a fantastic stretch of four games to end the season last year, but that's really all he's done his entire career is get hurt in the last four games of last year. And so I think it's definitely Ken Walker. Chris Carson is somebody that I hate to hear his story, because he was such a guy that I really liked. But it's definitely Ken Walker from my point of view.
Andrew, do you buy into late season surges like we saw with Rashad Penny last year? Guys who come on in the last four games, generally towards the end of our fantasy season. Do you buy that?
I guess for me, the question I ask is, does the market buy it? You know, is the market weighing Rashad Penny's, you know, season ending surge? And, you know, as an eighth round pick, probably not enough. You know, last year, you know, Jonathan Taylor, David Montgomery, or 2 years ago, heading into this past season, those guys had monster end of the seasons. And, you know, Jonathan Taylor ended up falling out of the first round in a lot of drafts because of, you know, Nyheim Hines, even though he was a league winner. So I think in this case, it's like, I'm definitely intrigued by the fact that he is pretty cheap because, you know, going in the eighth round, but no one is making you draft anyone from Seattle if you don't want to. Like, that's the first thing I want to point out. Like, I am the advocate of drafting guys on good offenses, because more often than not, that's just how you're going to win your league. So, yes, you can try to maybe figure out, okay, like, which of these Seattle running backs is more valuable? And really, it depends on what you need at the time you're drafting. So if you need a running back to start week one, I want Rashad Penny, like, because he's going to be the starter week one. But if I want the guy that's going to be on my team in week 10, it's probably going to be Ken Walker. He's younger and is not broken. It won't break into pieces like Rashad Penny will most definitely do as the season progresses. Like, I don't trust Rashad Penny to be there for the end of the season unless he somehow misses the beginning of the season. So for me, it's a matter of, what am I looking for? Am I good at running back and I'm planning on holding Kenneth Walker? Because you're going to have to do that. You're going to have to wait for Penny to get hurt, and then you can put Walker into your lineup, and then you're just hoping that his talent reflects and overcomes the situation in Seattle where he's just getting a ton of volume. So for me, it's probably going to be hands-off in most cases. I'm not really trying to necessarily draft either of these players, but it does depend on like the roster construction at the point of, okay, I need to start a running back. I've gone receiver heavy, tight end, whatever, in the start of my draft. Okay, I need Penny because I got to start somebody week one. But if it's, I can play the long game, all right, I'll go with Kenneth Walker.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Dave, do you agree?
Yeah, these are like your zero RB targets where guys are looking, just shooting for upside. You know, and if there was a sizable gap, like let's say Rashad Penny was 115.7, then I'd be more interested in him just taking the cheaper piece in a, you know, in a situation like this. But Rashad, he's just burnt me so many times that I'm just going to, you know, avoid that. You know, rookie running backs, they're typically, you know, at least one ends up as, you know, as an RB1 at the end of the year. Obviously, the odds on favorite is Breece Hall. But if you were to put money on who the next guy is, Ken Walker has to be up there. And I don't think anyone will be surprised, you know, if Ken Walker ended up starting, you know, starting for the Seahawks, 9, 10 or 12 games, because Rashad Penny is banged up.
All right, Justin, let's take a look at this depth chart. Then we have Penny, we have Walker. You mentioned Carson. Is there anybody else there who you're remotely interested in stashing?
Probably not. I'm always intrigued with DJ Dallas because they seem to use him in some of the passing situations, and I think they're going to be trailing a lot this year. But you could say the same thing with Travis Homer. I mean, it's roll the dice. If you're, you know, I'm hoping that no one is in the situation where they have to mess around with the back end of this depth chart. The best thing would potentially be for cap casualties to come about and thin this room out a little bit, and then kind of have that discussion as the season gets closer.
Yeah, I do like what Travis Homer does for their special teams. He's actually a very good special teams player there. So he always sticks around on some of my rosters. And of course, I mean deep rosters, like 65 players, IDP. So 20 rosters, no. But I don't know. I can't quit Travis Homer.
Well, we joked about training camp and beat writers and hype, and Dynasty loves to hype up random players. And remember the Darwin Thompson summer? Gosh. That was things got heated on Twitter about Darwin Thompson.
What? Things got heated on Twitter over a meaningless player? Come on now.
He was going to be the next Andy Reid, just like come out of nowhere, just bomb it running back. It was, I remember that.
There's definitely some deleted tweets. I mean, some, you know, people, you know, it's like the Keyshawn Vaughn summer. I mean, there's always a guy that, you know, everyone wants to, you know, they want to be ahead of everybody else. But people were pretty excited about Darwin Thompson.
Our boy Royce Freeman was that. He had a summer.
He at least had some draft capital, you know. Yeah. But, like, people tried to make Darwin Thompson. They tried to just make it a thing.
I think the one thing just to close out Seattle too, though, is Rashad Penny. They did offer him another contract, so they paid him. I mean, they could have declined his fifth year option, so they did bring him back and paid him a decent sum of money. So, if we're following the money, as Andrew talked about earlier, there is something there. So, the beginning of the season, Rashad Penny might be somebody to look at.
Yep.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, you follow the money, but you also follow the draft capital, and then there's Chris Carson, who Pete Carroll, I believe, is best friends with, which always makes it a difficult situation. All right, gentlemen. Next up, the Buffalo Bills. Man, Devin Singletary has become forgotten in that backfield, at least the people I've been talking to. Everybody is reaching for James Cook. We see them going off at the – Devin Singletary is going off at the end of the seventh. James Cook's going in the middle of the ninth. Andrew, Gun to your head, who do you pick?
I'm picking Devin Singletary here. And it's so weird looking at these ADPs versus the Seahawks running backs ADPs, where they're almost kind of in like the same range and they couldn't be two totally different situations to be in. It's like, I'll take stabs on both Bills running backs, you know, instead of drafting the Seattle ones. Like, I don't want any of the Seattle running backs. Give me these Bills running backs and I'll figure it out. You know, one will merge or whatever. But for me, it's still Devin Singletary. Again, going back to the market not valuing how good he was at the end of last year and how the Bills unleashed him. You know, he was RB3 in terms of points per game, basically in the second half of the season when the Bills finally started to have him be the featured player in their offense. And I was trying to figure out why that happened. And when you look back at week 1 and actually week 2, like, Devin Singletary kept fumbling the ball. So there were some like ball security issues that he was going through. And then I think he just got flat out benched. Like, you know, we're putting Zach Moss in, we're going to see how this goes. And obviously, we all know how that went. It didn't go at all. And they're like, all right, we're going to go back to Singletary. Singletary was rock solid down the stretch and didn't fumble once. So with a team that's a Super Bowl caliber roster, they can't lose because of their running back. And Singletary has the trust of the coaching staff there and Josh Allen, which makes me confident that he's going to be the lead guy in this backfield. Whereas James Cook, I think we'll see his role grow as the season continues. But I think it's really going to come in spurts, like in high-paced games and shootouts where they're trailing. Okay, like let's get James Cook in there. Because remember, it's like, you know, would we be so excited about James Cook as we would be like a J.D. McKissic, like the guy they tried to sign this season? Like, no. But James Cook could have the same role they envision J.D. McKissic having in this offense. And no one will be taking him in the 9th round. We would be like, oh, like McKissic, like take him in like round 15 and we'll see what happens. Like, okay. But James Cook, because he has the draft capital attached to him, yes, I would be drafting James Cook higher than McKissic. But at the same time, to the role itself, he may only be getting like 5-6 touches per game coming in receptions. And while Singletary is getting red zone work, where when Singletary was the lead back, again, 3rd in the NFL in red zone touches, he had more than Josh Allen. And eventually Josh Allen will stop running because he's like, hey, I'm like the number one investment in this offense and in this franchise. I need to make a quote unquote business decision and not kill my body. Let's give it to our running back in the end zone. So that's why for me, it's Singletary and I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah. You always want to grab pieces of the best offenses. And this is definitely a great, great offense. Justin, if you had to put some money on this, which way are you going?
It's Singletary for me too. Singletary was actually a guy that I did a pod with Dave not too long ago, and he was my breakout guy that I think this season. I think he did really well coming down the stretch. He was averaging over 17 carries a game. I think it was actually 19 and 2.5 targets. The targets I wish would tick up a little bit, but Andrew already talked about it, right? It's the touchdown equity in an offense that's going to be really good with a $200 million quarterback that at some point they're going to stop getting just pummeled in those run options. He's still going to run, but at the same time, I think Devin Singletary is going to get a ton of chances in the green zone area of the field, and that's what I want to sign up for.
Dave, looking at this depth chart, RIP Zach Moss, Duke Johnson, right? He's going to get carries sometime, yeah. Right?
I mean, Duke Johnson is, you know, he's someone that I don't even know what his ADP is, but, you know, he was a waiver wire darling at the end of the season last year, and nobody would have predicted that. I mean, he literally came off of the couch and onto your fantasy roster. You know, he's the only one on here. I mean, they do not like Zach Moss whatsoever. And I agree with just everything Andrew said, you know, about James Cook. And, you know, with the McKissic situation, it was kind of like tea leaves that we forgot about. And then all of a sudden they draft James Cook and it's like, oh yeah, that makes sense as far as your mock drafts and stuff. And, you know, with the Bills last year, they kind of got the Chiefs treatment where people started, like, you know, Bucky Brooks calls it putting the safeties in the parking lot. I mean, people were just 20 yards deep saying Josh Allen's not going to throw it deep. We want to eat a dink and dunk. And then what did they do? They just shredded them with short passing game and the, you know, upticks in the running game. And they're going to, you know, they can utilize James Cook. You know, he profiles as a much better pass catcher than Devin Singletary and offers a different complement to him. I don't think he's going to take Devin Singletary's job right away unless the fumbles happen. And if those do, that's going to open up the door for James Cook. And like Andrew said, you can get both these guys. They're not, you know, you're not paying a whole lot to get both of them. And they both could have standalone value. And if one goes down, have immense value. One of the best offenses in the league.
Absolutely. Something that we like to do on this show when we have a guest on is talk to them a little bit about how they got started and their journey, right, in this field. So I think at the halfway point of this pod is a good time for us to sit down and talk a little bit to Mr. Erickson about his journey. Dave?
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of us are in this and, you know, we would have, you know, dreams of doing this full time or, you know, being able to be on Fantasy Pros. So, Andrew, can you talk to a little to us a little bit about how you got started? When did you start playing fantasy football? And did you ever think you would be, you know, a full-time fantasy analyst?
Yeah, so I started playing fantasy football back in, I think it was 2007. So I was in, I think, like sixth or seventh grade. I am 28 years old, so I don't know exactly how old I was at the time, but somewhere in that range. You know, I was in middle school, high school type of area, and I remember it because my aunt drafted Tom Brady in the first round of our family league, and we all made fun of her because, like, yeah, you're stupid. Like, you can't draft quarterbacks that early. And then, what do you know, Tom Brady threw for 50 touchdowns that year. So we all looked really dumb because she was right. And I think she had him and Randy Moss. So it was, she was running circles around us because she was drinking all that Kool-Aid. So it worked out for her. But that's when I first started playing and I just kind of fell in love with the game. I managed the team with my dad that season. And I kind of understood, like, you know, learning how, like, the waiver wire works and how to set your lineup every week. And I remember I had this, like, really slow computer at the time. And I would literally have to, like, carve out like 2 or 3 hours a night to just like do like my waiver wire pickups because like the computer had to like boot up and it took forever. So I was just already super invested in it from the minute that I started playing. And that's kind of where my love began with it. I always liked football, but the fantasy side really added another layer. And ever since that point, I was always more invested in team transactions during the season. And that's kind of how I got my start. So, but from a analyst perspective, you know, after I graduated from college, I went to business school to study marketing. I really wanted to work in sports. Like, that was really my main goal. I always loved sports, as I kind of mentioned already. And my goal was I really want to work in like fantasy sports. Like, I really thought long and hard about like what I wanted to do. And that's kind of how I started. I was like, all right, like, how do I make this happen? So I started writing for a smaller website called Gridiron Experts. You know, Mike Riggs is the guy over there. And he gave me an opportunity to write for them on just small articles. I remember my first article I ever wrote was about Julius Thomas going to the Miami Dolphins and talking about how he wasn't going to ever be the same guy again. So, you know, first article was a big W for me. I was really happy about that. So, but, and that's kind of what got me hooked, that I just started to continue to learn about, you know, the Twitter, you know, finding fantasy on Twitter, just like discovering the whole ecosystem that exists that you just don't know about. Like, I had a Twitter, you know, with that I would follow my friends in real life, but never really realized that there are these niche communities for different types of hobbies. And I never really realized that was on Twitter until, you know, one of my friends, Mitchell Renz, who works over at Chat Sports now, he really introduced me to like my first retweet share group. And I was like, oh man, like, this is really cool. Like, people are just like sharing and retweeting each other's articles. Like, this is kind of fun. So that's what I started doing, you know, as I would working a full-time job out of school, working for a marketing agency, but I hated that. I did not like that job. It was a lot of work. And I found that listening to fantasy football podcasts was kind of like my escape, you know, on my 90-minute commute home. I'd be like throwing in the footballers or ESPN, Yahoo, Roto World. Just like, this is what I want to do. Like, I want to listen to these people talk about the game. And that was like what I look forward to the most. Like, kind of got me through my work day knowing that, all right, I get to listen to the guys talk about X, Y, Z, whatever news just broke. I'm really excited for that. And I was like, you know, I really want to do this. Like, this is something that I want to do. So basically, to try to take that next step, I would continue to create content for, you know, a couple of different websites here and there. But I really didn't make another bigger step until I made the commitment to try to network more. And basically what I ended up doing was there were these conferences that they would put on, the FSGA, the Fantasy Football Expo, And I made it like my goal to go to these expos, no matter how much it would cost, whether it was by like flying, by train, by whatever, because I needed to get a put a face to the content, because I knew that I had good content to offer. It's just a matter of putting a face to that content and getting people to actually know me and know who I am. And this happens with a lot of jobs. Just most people get jobs, at least in my experience. All of my jobs I've had full-time, part-time, is because I knew someone and I had a connection with them. And it's about building relationships. And that's what I needed to do to try to get a foot in the door in the fantasy football space. And my biggest break came when I went to the expo, I think back in 2019, I believe it was. And I got to meet Jet Ratcliffe from formerly of PFF. And at the time, I was also doing part-time work for PFF, doing, you know, some of their data collection stuff. So I was able to introduce myself to him as saying like, hey, I'm like a part-time worker, et cetera. And, you know, what do I have to do to like to break into the space, like for fantasy? And obviously at the time there was nothing open, but you know, when something did come open, like Jeff was one of the first people to reach out to me and be like, hey, there's a job here that you should apply to. So it sounds really simple, because I think that to an extent it is, in terms of you just need to network with the right people, and not necessarily in a way of like, I'm only getting to know you because I want you to get me a job. Like, it had coming in a more natural way, like I was going to be friends with these people no matter what. And I always kind of think you probably have a better chance of finding a job or career by going out to like a bar and just like talking to random people than you do like just sending your resume, because that doesn't work. Like, just like the resume sends that you feel like you're being productive because you're doing it, but at the end of the day, it doesn't actually move the needle for anything. It's really about building those connections with real people. And there's obviously no guarantee that when you build a connection, but if you build 10 connections, if you build 100 connections, like it becomes a numbers game where it's like, hey, I only need one to hit. I only need to get lucky once. I only need one job to open up. And the minute that job opened up, I want to make sure I'm at the top of the list of recommended candidates. So that's kind of how my story played out. And in 2020, I was hired by PFF as a full-time fantasy analyst, summer of 2020, after I actually got furloughed from my other job during the pandemic. So I fell into very favorable circumstances after dealing with the repercussions of the pandemic. And PFF was where I got my start. You know, Jeff Ratcliffe was there, I think, for like 1 week before he ended up moving on to a different endeavor, which was not necessarily his plan. He told me he was very excited to work for me. He didn't just like leave after I got hired. And I have a very good relationship with him to this day. But and that's where I got my start working there up until the end of this past season, and then taking a newer job at Fantasy Pros, which I've just been really excited about. The team that we've built over there between myself, Derek Brown, Joe Pisapia, Pat Fitzmaurice, Matthew Friedman, Thor Nystrom, we just basically added. I mean, we've got a juggernaut of guys over there, and I'm really excited for this season and for seasons to come.
Yeah, what you say about networking is so key. As definitely the elder person on this podcast, all of my jobs have come from getting to know somebody. In any possible, like, you just have to know somebody in order to get through all of the bots, all of the resume builders, all of those things. You just have to get out there. I went to the expo last year, Andrew, for the first time, because I'm kind of an introvert in real life, like not on pods, but in real life. I don't like talking to people because I get scared. And so I like built up all my confidence to go there. And it was amazing. It was such an amazing opportunity to be able to talk to all the people you hear on podcasts, all the people who write the articles you read. Everybody who was anybody was there, and they're all open and they're all willing to listen, which is incredible. I think your story is what people need to hear who want to get into this industry.
Yeah.
Now, the biggest question I have, though, is that league with your family still going?
It is not. No, they didn't want to play with me anymore after after I committed my entire career to fantasy sports.
We are, I'm in a father-son league. with all the, which I think we're in our 11th year, and my son and I are kind of the dynasty of the league. Like we have six of like the 11 championships. But they leave us in, they don't kick us out. And I just give my son advice and draft bad teams for myself. So he feels better. You know, it's all about building up the youth. Well, that was fantastic. Dave, do you have any other questions? Justin?
No, Andrew nailed it. I mean, that's exactly what I was asking, you know, kind of what are some tips, and gave some great ones, you know, networking, relationships. You know, I do a lot of hiring, and I would much rather hire the person that I know, because at the end of the day, it's about trust, reliability. Resumes, you know, they're, you know, interviews are like first dates. You know, you're like, man, this guy is awesome. And then, you know, next thing you know, you're like, man, he's late all the time. He doesn't, you know, meet deadlines, all this. I'm like, man, I should have hired JJ for this. So, you know, at the end of the day, you build the relationships, and what you said about being, you know, organic and authentic versus just like, hey, Andrew, I want to talk to you because I need something from you. So get out there, go to the expo. There's a lot of other, you know, places, and do pods, you know, guest on pods and do things like that is another form of networking. And even if it's not fantasy, you can take everything Andrew said and apply it to your other careers.
Yeah. I think one last thing too, to mention is just get the reps in, you know, I think someone, I don't know if this was like a famous quote, but it's just like, don't do your job, do the job that you want to do. You know, it's like, you have to be, if you want to be a podcaster, then record podcast. Like, who cares who listens to it? Like, because if you're going to be in a position where I want to be a professional podcaster one day, I want to be a professional writer, I want to be a YouTuber, then you better be doing podcasts, writing articles, making YouTube videos. Or do they need to be perfect? No, but they need to be getting better, and you need to be getting those reps in. And that was a big thing for me, just like trying to get as many reps in as many different avenues. Cause I knew like what we all know what the job entails or what it most likely is going to entail. So it's not, well, you don't meet the qualifications, Mr. Erickson. It's like, no, like I do, like I know exactly what you're looking for. And again, then the pieces kind of come together where I have the skills and now I have the relationship. So that way, when you do end up getting the job, you can thrive and succeed.
Great stuff. Great awesome stuff. Words of wisdom. I almost don't even want to go back to what we were talking about. I'd rather stick here. But there's some more backfields to talk about. So thank you, Andrew, for sharing with us. Thank you, Dave, for asking the questions. But we're looking at the Patriots backfield now. This, in general, is always a muddled situation. For as long as I can remember, there has never been like a clear-cut Patriots running back who you wanted. So now we see Damian Harris coming off in the 7th round, Ramondre Stevenson coming off at the tail end of the 9th. Andrew, are you investing in either of these players?
I am not investing in Damian Harris, and I am investing everything in Ramondre Stevenson. I think that if you look at the way things kind of shook out at the end of last season, basically from week 9 onward, Ramondre was actually out touching Damian Harris on a per game basis. And Ramondre was just straight out nasty at the end of last year when he, you know, he did the impossible. He escaped the Bill Belichick doghouse. Like that does not happen for many players. Like, dude, Randy Moss was in the doghouse and got traded. Like that does not happen for players, especially a rookie running back who Bill Belichick is notorious for redshirting. Like, yep. Damian Harris barely even played when he was a rookie running back. And the only rookie running backs to really ever play were always first round picks. So it was the draft capital that was dictating they get playing time, not even necessarily how good they were, how Belichick felt about it. He's like, all right, Sony Michel, like, you have to play because we drafted you 31st overall, like idiots. So Ramondre, for what he was able to do, I think from week 9 onward, he was actually PFF's third highest graded running back overall, and he was actually PFF's highest graded rookie running back. And if you just look back at how PFF has graded their running backs, especially rookies, I mean, it puts him into territory with Alvin Kamara, Jonathan Taylor, Josh Jacobs, like guys that continued to progress into their second seasons and be major, not even just like, okay, they contributed to fantasy a little bit, but like major fantasy contributors, even like Josh Jacobs. No, he's not this world beater, but I mean, he's a fantasy RB too. Like that's still worth something across all fantasy formats. And that's obviously not where Ramondre Stevenson is valued whatsoever here going, you know, in the 9th, 10th round. So for me, the upside is all with Stevenson. Damien Harris, his usage is horrible. Like basically last year, it was touchdown or bust with him. He actually was worse than Ramondre Stevenson in terms of expected fantasy points per game over the second half of the year. Ramondre has the pass catching ability. Ramondre has the size, and Harris has been banged up a little bit. So for me, Ramondre is someone that I'm basically trying to draft in every single draft I'm in, whether it's best ball or a redraft, because I think that it's really just a matter of time before he takes over the backfield. Like something that really stuck up to me when reading an ESPN article from, I think it was from Mike Reese, who I think is one of the best like actual beat reporters, like really accurate and not just like steaming players for the sake of, you know, okay, I need buzz about a player. I think that he's just really spot on with his analysis. And something he wrote about and referred to was Rob Ninkovich, an old linebacker for the Patriots and who is now with ESPN. And Rob Ninkovich looked at Ramondre Stevenson and said that he could be a top three running back in the NFL. Not on the Patriots, in the NFL. And that just like really kind of like opened my eyes. And it's like, you know what? And I thought about it. I was like, dude, like, what did Ramondre do last year to make you think that he couldn't take over this backfield and that he wasn't just an absolute baller? I think that he is kind of the prototypical fantasy football running back where he has the size to bury defenders, goal line usage, and he's actually like super underrated as a receiver. So I think Ramondre just is going to run circles around Harris this year.
Now, Justin, with all of this, right, everything that Andrew said is absolutely true. With the idea that Damian Harris is in the final year of his contract, could he be a trade candidate? Like, is there a possibility that Harris doesn't play for the Pats this year? Houston?
Goes to the Raiders. Josh McDaniels.
Another running back in the Raiders room. Don't put that evil out there, Andrew.
It's going to happen, man.
No, I mean, I think Damian Harris could definitely be a trade candidate. I mean, I don't know that they would get anything because he's in the last year of that deal. And so it may just be, you know, how Belichick is. He'll just stick with somebody and then just let him throw him to the trash heap after the season just because he can. Although, you know, they love some late round picks and to try and take some shots. So I could see it. I think the back that I'm intrigued with, only because I made a commitment early in my fantasy playing days of never drafting Patriots running backs, whether I kind of take that on the chin or you know, it ends up working out. But I'm interested to see what the buzz will be on James White coming off injury out of camp. So they had over 100 targets to the running backs last year. I'm chasing some targets in that offense. They're going to have to score to keep up in the AFC. Ramondre does have pass catching chops. And so I would love to see Ramondre be the guy that kind of takes that step forward and becomes more of that three down type role, but find somebody who loves you the way Bill Belichick loves James White. And I think that's something to look at and see how he looks coming into camp.
Yeah. You know, I love me some James White. I don't know if it's as much Belichick as it was Brady. Brady loved James White. Now you can get him though. He's only going around earlier than Burkhead. Right? He's going in the 19th round, so you can throw a late chip onto him. Dave, is there anybody in this depth chart though?
Yeah,
standing out to you.
Pierre Strong's interesting. You know, I think Pierre Strong is someone that you can look at.
This year's JJ Taylor.
Just whoever doesn't fumble the ball is really like the issue. It's like that's the biggest thing where it's like, you know, Ramondre, part of the reason he got out of the doghouse is because he had to make room for JJ Taylor to get put into the doghouse after he fumbled against the Buccaneers, I think, against Tom Brady. So the fumbles, man.
Yeah. So with Pierre Strong, I think it is very interesting that they drafted two, not one, but two running backs. You know, obviously with Damian Harris potentially leaving next year, most likely leaving if he doesn't leave sooner. Everyone, you know, is getting Damian Harris offers all off season because everyone's trying to unload him. But Pierre Strong is interesting, and just mainly because of the James White situation, there's buzz out there that he may not be ready to start the season. Sounds like the hip injury was pretty serious. And so that's something to keep an eye on.
Real quick, any concerns with any of you about the fact that they do not have an offensive coordinator and they're going to be consulting Joe Judge and Matt Patricia.
A ton of concern. I mean, a ton of concern. I mean, those guys, Joe Judge was, I mean, it was a nightmare when he came out from under Belichick's umbrella and went to New York. Patricia's a defensive-minded coach. I mean, he's got some offensive experience, but I mean, he's mostly defensive. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I have no idea what this offense is going to look like, and it is it's a big concern for all of their skill position players. Sorry.
I guess for me, I think that it's hard for us to quantify it, because I think that sometimes like the coaching analysis gets overblown where, you know, okay, so, you know, if we don't know who the offensive coordinator is, okay, so like, but how do you like quantify that with the players you draft? It's really hard to do. And for me, it's like, I'm willing to take the discount that Patriots players have because of the suppressed, you know, whoever the offensive coordinator is, and just based on, well, I think Mac Jones is going to take a step in year two because I think Mac Jones is going to shoulder more of the offense. Like, who's to say Mac Jones isn't just the offensive coordinator? Like, how do you know? Because Bill Belichick can't say that. Like, he's a player. Like, he can't be a coach, but Mac Jones could be in there calling the plays. And it's like, yeah, we just have, you know, Judge and Patricia. Like, would anybody be surprised if those guys are just puppets? Because that's basically what they've been anyway. So I think that trying to copy and paste what those guys did with the Lions, with the Giants, like, I can't just imagine what Belichick's been. Oh, yeah, just, like, do exactly what you did with the Giants. Like, that'll be perfect. And so,
you know what would make us win? The Lions offense.
Well, and neither of those guys were offensive play callers for the Giants or the Lions. So you can't even say this is what their tendencies are, as we know they're going to do.
All right, let's go on to the next backfield. We're looking, sticking in the AFC East, we're going to the Dolphins. Three-headed nightmare. 9:05, we see Chase Edmonds, followed five rounds later by Raheem Mostert, followed almost immediately by Sony Michel. Andrew, are you just avoiding, or are you putting a chip on one of these guys?
No, definitely embracing the Miami Dolphins backfield because they're all pretty cheap. And that's despite the fact that, you know, we're getting Mike McDaniel coming over from the 49ers running backs where all they do is run efficiently. Like, that's all they do in this system. And Mike McDaniel was the former run game coordinator for the 49ers. So I'm expecting whoever the lead guy in this backfield to be an efficient running back. And for me, I like where Edmonds is going. I don't think that his upside is nearly that high. I don't think he's ever going to be like a bell cow just because of the way that his size is, the way he's used. You know, he's a great pass catcher, and I think that means he can be an RB2 for your lineup, especially in PPR formats. But ultimately, I mean, he's probably going to break down. Raheem Mostert, I'm not touching. At 30 years old, the guy's literally never played an entire season. I'm not touching Raheem Mostert. And then Sony Michel is probably actually my favorite guy because I just drafted him with my last pick. Because of these three running backs, he is the most proven with a three-down skill set. Like, he's shown that he can actually handle a big load, where he's probably the least explosive of the three. He might just be the only guy that's left, because the offense, the way that this run game works, it is not favorable to keeping these guys healthy long-term. That's the reason why there are so many running backs. It's the reason why Myles Gaskin will probably stay on the roster, even though he's totally dust. It's just because he's another body that they're going to just try to churn through as the season progresses. So I think Michelle is just, he's free. So I like taking him, but I have no problem with going after Edmonds too, because I think when Edmonds is healthy, I think that he will be really productive in this offense.
Dave, are you on board with that? Are you throwing a chip on Sony and Chase and avoiding Mostert?
Yeah, no, exactly what he said. So I even threw in the group chat and said, hey, I'm obviously not afraid to say things that, you know, are people might disagree with, but I was like, I like Sony Michel where he's at. And if he stays where he's at, it's going to be a great, you know, great option for one of those last picks, especially in best ball. He had a lot of goal line touches last year in that Rams offense. And he is the one that profiles as the short yardage back in this backfield. There's, you know, really tiny backs. Sony Michel's not a big dude, but he is big compared to these guys. And you're getting him so freaking cheap that, you know, I'm invested in him. And, you know, if Edmonds stays where he's at, it's worth a shot, because I am excited about McDaniel. Just the things that he says are, you know, just candy to a fantasy football, player's ear, of just like, you know, sometimes people make football hard. I just like, you know, I want to get the ball into the hands of the of good players. And so we want to see if he actually does that. And there's obviously a lot of questions with this offense, but yeah, the price is right. And so Sonny Michel at 180, I'll take it. I do have one question for Andrew. So we didn't talk about the Saints backfield, and we are we going to talk about the Saints backfield?
We are not.
So I just have a question. So if Alvin Kamara gets suspended, you know, we don't know if he's going to get suspended or not. We talked about some of these muddled backfields. I did, you know, obviously there's been some rumors and things like that that probably have no weight to them whatsoever. But do you see someone from any of the backfields we talked about, maybe a Damian Harris or one of these guys like a Miles Gaskin, being someone that the Saints would target in a trade for, you know, a 4 or 5 game Alvin Kamara insurance?
I don't think so. I think they would probably just like sign a veteran and just roll with Mark Ingram. I mean, I know they brought David Johnson in for a visit, so clearly he's probably like on speed dial. It's like, hey, like the minute Kamara gets suspended, like we're going to call you back. So just like, we're just going to check you out now and make sure like you're healthy and good to go. Like basically be like, hey, stay in shape. Don't get fat. like we're going to be calling you very, very soon. So yeah, I mean, the Saints are smart. I mean, really no organization should trade anything for a running back if we're being totally honest here. So the Saints, as a more progressive organization, I think would probably just be, we'll just sign someone off the street and roll, roll with Mark Ingram.
Stay in shape. Don't get fat. Exact mantra I say to the mirror every morning. Every morning, my friends. All right. Let's take a look at the Falcons real quick. We have Cordarrelle Patterson going off at 804. Tyler Allgeier going off at 1309. Right, we have the Fantasy Pros ECR, RB34, RB56. Dave, which way are we leaning here?
Patterson, you know, especially in your PPR formats. I know everyone's upset that he got the receiver designation taken away in sleeper, but it is what it is. We saw how they used him last year. They brought him back. You know, I think that's where I would go. And the price is not, you know, you're not having to pay a whole lot for him.
Erickson, you're on board?
Yeah, I think Patterson makes probably the most sense. And it pains me because I really liked Tyler Allgeier coming out of BYU. I really liked his profile a lot. I thought that reminded me a lot of not necessarily Elijah Mitchell, but he just checked off a lot of the boxes that Elijah Mitchell checked off when he was coming out. So he was someone that I was kind of like, kind of attaching my name to as, you know, a running back to watch. And then he got the landing spot. I was like, oh, this is awesome. And then we got the Falcons schedule and I was like, wow, this is absolutely horrible because I don't envision him, you know, having a dynamic role in the passing game, especially early on. The offensive line is obviously not good in Atlanta, but like the way they opened the season against the run defenses, Saints, Rams, Seahawks, Browns, Buccaneers, 49ers, like, it is absolutely horrible. Like, I don't know how they're going to run the ball at all. And unfortunately, that's going to just nuke Allgeier. So it's going to be, Allgeier's going to probably have games, even if he's like getting the workload, he's going to get 15 carries for like 40 yards. And people are going to be like, this guy sucks. And I think that's going to be a window to buy Allgeier as the schedule lightens up. But I really am not expecting much of production from really any of these running backs early on. I think that there's going to be a buying window for a guy like Allgeier, but that's the reason why I haven't been drafting, because I'm like, dude, he's going to be horrible. This whole offense is going to probably be horrible to start the year. And I think that's just always something to keep in mind with schedules. Like, yes, you don't want to just look at everything from afar, you know, kind of, but looking at the early season schedule like matters. Like, knowing they play the Saints week 1, like, don't start any Falcons, like, play, like, you're not going to want to start Falcons running back week 1 against the Saints defense that just is a, you just can't run on them. And then week 2 against the Rams, horrible. So I think those are important things to kind of keep in mind, especially with more of these fringy running backs where it's like Allgeier's going to get dropped in redraft leagues.
Yep.
Always are, right? You always find those rookies dropping off a couple weeks into the season as people get discontented and injuries pile up. All right, last backfield. Gentlemen, Kansas City, we have CEH going off at 701. Rojo's going off at 1008. Justin, this is on you. You are making the decision. You are Andy Reid. Who's your starter?
I think it has to be Rojo. I think Rojo showed some really good running back skills last season with the Bucs. Obviously, he had some fumble trouble at times, and Bruce Arians would put him in the doghouse. He kind of had a, you know, Bill Belichick light type doghouse in Tampa Bay for a little bit. You know, I would love for it to be Clyde Edwards-Helaire because of my dynasty stashes that I kind of, you know, scooped up CEH where I could as everybody was selling. And I'm like sitting here with the stock like, oh man, can this go up, please? But I think for that, for what they need in Kansas City, it's Ronald Jones. And I think they have enough talent, you know, with, you know, CEH could spell them, Jerick McKinnon can spell them in the passing game, but Ronald Jones is kind of that between the tackles 20s, in between the 20s talent that they really should probably lean on.
Erickson, are you on board with that?
No, I can't go back to Ronald Jones, unfortunately, because I went back to him after, you know, a pretty strong 2020 season. But then Fournette kind of took over during the playoffs and I didn't weigh that heavily enough. You know, going back to these late season surges, is the market, you know, considering the fact of how this running back was treated down the stretch when it was crucial for the team to win games? And who was that running back for the Chiefs last year? It was Jerick McKinnon. Like, is he going to hold up for an entire season? Probably not. No, like, he's not going to be the bell cow. And really, I don't think that a lot of these Chiefs are going to be trustworthy assets. I mean, Ronald Jones can't catch. And okay, maybe he calls out a goal line role, or maybe the Chiefs just like, we're just going to throw the ball at the goal line every single time because we have Patrick Mahomes. Like, maybe that's what they'll do instead. I just think that the upside of a running back in the Chiefs offense is really just, hey, Edwards-Helaire and Ronald Jones have floors because they play with Patrick Mahomes. Like, they're not actually getting a ceiling. They just have floors because of the offense that they play in. And ultimately, that doesn't move the needle. If they were good, then we would see the ceiling of these top-tier running backs in a high-powered offense. But I can't say with a straight face that Edwards-Helaire and Ronald Jones are good, or at least complete running backs. They both have glaring flaws in their games. And if you just put them together, okay, maybe they'd be able to figure it out. But mixing in with McKinnon and even Derek Gore to an extent, who they trusted at the goal line a lot last year as well. Like, I would bet Derek Gore is like a dark horse to be the red zone guy for the Chiefs. So for me, I'm taking the late stabs on McKinnon and Derek Gore, and I'm not touching Edwards-Helaire Jones.
Yeah, Michael Carter from the Jets is going off right before him. Alexander Mattison is going off right after Rojo. But you can get Ramondre the round before. Rojo burnt me. I'm a very emotional dynasty player. Once I get burnt, I don't know. Listen, if somebody tells you who they are, you have to listen, right? Dave, are you looking at anybody in the rest of this depth chart? I know Andrew mentioned Derek Gore. Pacheco or Ely, those rookies.
Yeah, I think, you know, in your deep dynasty leagues, you know, Pacheco is interesting. Derek Gore is interesting. You can find him on the waiver wire on some of your leagues. And, you know, it's worth a shot. I mean, you never know what's going to happen with some of these guys. And there's definitely some guys that still have like Julian Edelman and things on their roster that they can cut to get some of them on these deep dynasty leagues that I've seen. But it's really hard to invest in CEH at that price point. That is a great spot for a lot of receivers. There's also some good running backs in that range. And it's just, even if you have a little bit of hope in him, there's just so many other guys that I'm just so much more confident in that I would go Ronald Jones over him because of the price point, but I'm not very interested in either of these guys. And then, you know, McKinnon will have some spike weeks and things like that. But like Erickson said, he gets hurt. And as much as we thought, like, Andy Reid offense are going to pepper the – no, they don't pepper the running backs with targets. So I'm not going to even think
that's going to happen. Daryl Williams.
Except Daryl Williams.
Why Daryl Williams? I don't know. I don't make the money that Andy Reid makes, so I can't make those decisions. Gentlemen, that was fantastic. Thank you. It is time for tags, where we let the riders know where they can find us at anything that we are working on. Mr. Erickson.
Yeah, so I'm over on Twitter at @AndrewErickson_, same handle on TikTok, same handle on Instagram, all the social media platforms that all the cool kids are on at least. So I do have a LinkedIn too, but I don't really use it that much. It's not that cool. So yeah, and all my work written content can be found over at Fantasy Pros, and I'm on the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast.
Fantastic, Dave.
Yeah, you can find me at Dynasty Dorks, Twitter, TikTok, all that cool stuff. At the SGPN, that's the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. So SGPN Fantasy. We had Mike Florio on last night. Tomorrow, I am interviewing Fantasy Football Hall of Famer Greg Kellogg, who used to write for Fox Sports. We're going to talk a little bit about the history of fantasy football, the curse of 370. So it should be pretty interesting. I just talked to him earlier. He's a real interesting guy.
That's awesome. Justin.
Yeah, so you can find me at JFHornets25. I'm not like these cool kids. I'm only on Twitter when it comes to the fantasy game. But as of tonight, obviously with our announcement, I'll be with the Rod Pod guys. And so I'm looking forward to getting into that this season. I also do some stuff with We Know Fantasy and my boy Dave and the DDFF crew that we have. We're going to keep that alive, I hope, this season as well. So everybody, remember, I have to sign off on my campaign, Sammy Watkins Week 1. That's still alive. So you're going to hear it from me until the season starts.
Hey, listen, Dave and I were just having a conversation on Twitter with Doug Orth, talking a little bit about Sammy Watkins. I'm not going to say I didn't send Week out one. A couple trade offers.
Week one.
Darius Slayton for Sammy Watkins. Come on. Somebody has to take that, right? All right. Thank you to Andrew for joining us tonight. Make sure you are following him at Andrew Erickson _ on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, all the good ones, to check out his latest content. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you to Dave for helping put together this week's show. And of course, welcome to the Rider Dynasty team, Justin. It was great having you on tonight. You can find me on Twitter at JJ Wenner. Sorry, I wanted to go back there and look a little bit more at Derek Gore. Make sure you're going to Gridiron Ratings. Look at all their content. Tune into the Chop Shop with Ronnie and Jeff on Saturday. Getting Defensive is going to be back on Tuesday with guests Jorge and Nate from Fantasy and Frames. And next week on the Rod Pod, we welcome IDP guys writer Mace Riney to talk about some wide receivers. So from all of us to all of you, be safe, be well, and as always, boat drinks, my friends, boat drinks. Have a good night.